Our final case for argument this morning is United States against Stallings.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I represent Brett Stallings. Mr. Stallings is a 44-year-old man. He's been sentenced to 15 years in prison. He was convicted of being a felon in possession of a weapon. One of the elements for being convicted of a felon in possession of a weapon is that you have a prior conviction. Mr. Stallings' prior conviction at the time of this incident was back in 1988, 13 years before this particular incident occurred. This was a constructive possession case, which required that the defendant have the power to control the weapon. If you assume that all of the evidence in this case to be true, this court still would find reversal. The evidence was as follows. Mr. Stallings was standing in a public parking lot. It was dark outside. The parking lot was made of broken asphalt and concrete. Two undercover police officer vehicles pulled into the parking lot. Several suspects fled. Stallings did not flee. He was seen bending down in front of a small Dodge pickup truck. The truck did not belong to him. A gun was found underneath the truck. No one, not one of the officers who testified in the trial, testified that they saw the gun on Mr. Stallings' person or in Mr. Stallings' hand.
But they heard it. I mean, they heard the gun. They heard something fall to the ground and spin around. I mean, there was some circumstantial evidence.
With regard to the sound.
Yes.
Looking at the testimony, that officer who testified that he heard a sound was still driving his vehicle at that time, according to his passenger agent Zaber. Also, there was testimony that several people fled, and there was also a woman by the name of Katrina Hawking standing by that truck.
Case, but it's a circumstantial case, and the jury apparently bought this theory that he ditched the something under the truck, and it was the gun, and tied the two together. And it seems like you're just repeating an argument that was made to the jury that the evidence was.
There were several arguments that weren't made to the jury, Your Honor, and one of the claims that we have on appeal is ineffective assistance of counsel.
And are you sure you want to pursue that right now, because it's an uphill battle you have trying to establish on direct appeal your Sixth Amendment claim? You know, you could also withdraw the claim and try to build a more fulsome record for habeas review.
I understand that, Your Honor. And the reason why I bring it up on this appeal is because if you look at the totality of the circumstances here, you understand what actually happened at trial, and you can see that no reasonable jury would not have found reasonable doubt.
Well, that's different from your Sixth Amendment argument.
Yes, that is different, Your Honor. It is different.
I want to urge you to take seriously the question Judge Williams has asked. That this court has now been in existence for 114 years. The number of cases where we've reversed on direct appeal on ineffective assistance grounds is zero in 114 years.
I understand that.
And raising such an argument now will preclude it ever being raised later on a more complete record.
I understand that, Your Honor.
Does your client understand that?
Yes.
That this is a can't-win proposition? You can lose, but he can't win?
Yes. He understands it and willing to take the risk.
It's not a risk.
This is an insufficiency of the evidence argument.
Yeah, and I'd like. But see, you could proceed on that insufficiency of the evidence and drop the Sixth Amendment claim. You know, so it's just the implications of it are so significant. It wouldn't shut you out or foreclose you from the sufficiency argument.
I understand that. I appreciate that, Your Honor. With regard to the insufficiency of the evidence argument, I'd like to bring to the court's attention two cases. One is a Fourth Circuit case and one is an Eighth Circuit case. The first case, the United States versus Blue, in that particular case, a police officer saw two gentlemen driving in a car, and he waited until they were underneath a lighted area to put on his sirens or whatever to pull the car over. In that lit area, he saw the passenger, Blue, dip his shoulder down in the car. He pulled the car over and arrested both Blue and the driver. He searched the car. A gun was found, and .38 caliber was found, underneath Blue's seat. And the Fourth Circuit Court reversed that conviction based on a lack of evidence, a lack of power to control the gun. In that case, as in this case, there was no testimony that Blue owned the car. There was no testimony that Blue owned the gun. There were no fingerprints on the gun. The United States versus Blue is substantially similar to the case at bar. I also like to bring to the court's attention United States versus Matkins. That's an Eighth Circuit case. In that particular case, Matkins was seen working under the hood of a car. Police officer approached the car, saw that a gun was protruding out of the front seat of the car, and arrested Matkins. Again, the Eighth Circuit in that conviction reversed based on lack of fingerprints on the gun, no evidence that Matkins owned the car, and no evidence that he owned the gun. In this particular case, applying those two cases to this, there's no evidence that any of these officers saw Stallings in a car owned by him. And with regard to the ineffective assistance counsel argument, I just want to make a comment that the fact that Stallings did not own that truck was never brought to the jury's attention. That's a critical fact in a constructive possession case.
And then there was another grounds for the ineffective assistance claim, which had to do with his handcuffs and him appearing before the jury.
That is true. There are several grounds for...
Right, but I mean, in terms of that, there were several questions that I had that I don't think the record can answer. Like, was the jury in the box when the marshals brought him into the courtroom? Did he really, as he contends, tell his lawyer to object when the jury saw him in the handcuffs? Were the handcuffs visible such that the jury could infer that he was in restraint? Did the court believe he posed a security threat? I mean, none of these questions are answered in the record. I mean, which is the problem with dealing with this claim now. So.
That is true. However, there are several other matters that were not addressed during the trial that certainly any reasonable jury would have found reasonable doubt here. Like the fact that defense counsel didn't explain to the jury or measure the weight of the gun. Okay, the testimony is that Brett Stallings is standing in front of the small pickup truck, and the gun is found at the front left wheel. Okay, that's what, 2-3 feet away. How long can a gun actually slide or spin for that period of time? Given the other testimony that the officer saw this gun spinning even after he unbuckled his seatbelt, he got up and walked 20 feet over to where Brett Stallings was standing. None of that stuff was brought before the jury. And that would have established reasonable doubt. Nonetheless, getting back to my ineffective assistance of counsel, my insufficiency of the evidence argument, I want to bring to the court's attention again a Seventh Circuit court case called United States versus Rawlings. In that case, it discusses the power to control argument. That is what element is missing in this case. There is nothing, no physical evidence linking Brett Stallings to this gun. There's no fingerprints. He didn't own the car. He's standing in a public parking lot where several people fled and Stallings remained. Your Honors, I respectfully request that the court reverse this decision and, at the very least, grant Mr. Stallings a new trial. That concludes my argument. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ms. Houck. Mr. Lloyd.
My name is Richard Lloyd. I was the trial counsel in this case, and it's the government's position that the judgment and sentence of the district court should be affirmed. Drawing all reasonable inferences in favor of the government, it was more than sufficient evidence in this case to prove the defendant guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. Looking at the court, Judge Evans, Judge Easterbrook, and Judge Williams, this is basically the type of situation we had there in the parking lot, with Judge Easterbrook being in the place of the Dodge Dakota pickup truck, Judge Evans, the Chevrolet Caprice car.
You checked our records to see how many felony convictions each of us has?
No, Your Honor, I have not, and I sincerely hope that there are none. But the point the government is making in this, that there was testimony at trial that there were people on the parking lot. The parking lot is the strip mall. There's a barbershop which was closed at 8:45 p.m. on June 19th of 2001, and it was a bar. There were cars in front of the bar. There were people standing down in the area of the bar. There was no one in the area of the barbershop, which is closed. Brett Stallings was in the parking lot. When he saw the officers slow down and pull into the parking lot, he changed directions, went to the walkway in front of the barbershop. Katrina Hawkins was still in the parking lot. There was no one in front of that Dodge Dakota pickup truck except for Brett Stallings. Except for a deus ex machina, an act of God, there was no one who could have thrown the firearm under the vehicle. The testimony at trial was the lighting conditions were good. It was around twilight, near the longest day of the year. There were halogen lights in front of the building. There were street lights. The parking lot was in fairly good condition near where the Dodge Dakota pickup truck was parked. And that's a non-issue. Who owned that Dodge Dakota pickup truck? There was no testimony that Brett Stallings went into the truck. The testimony was that he walked in front of the pickup truck, made a motion going downward so that his head almost hit the hood of the Dodge Dakota pickup truck, reached toward the middle of his body, made a throwing motion. Special Agent Zaber said he saw his right arm moving. Officer Bramlett said he saw his arms moving. Special Agent Whitaker said he saw the entire profile of the defendant, looked to the area where he made the throwing motion, saw a dark object spinning toward the side of the truck, got a look at the object, yelled gun. At that point, Officer Zaber drew his pistol, ordered the defendant to stand up. Special Agent Bramlett, Lieutenant Bramlett, testified that when he heard gun, that was about the same time you heard a heavy clunk, a metallic sound coming from the direction of the vehicle. Katrina Hawkins, when the officers pulled up, when one of the officers in Lieutenant Bramlett's SUV yelled police, she immediately put her hands up in the air. Lieutenant Bramlett stated that Katrina Hawkins was standing to the right of his vehicle, which would have been away from the Dodge Dakota pickup truck, way far away from where that gun was thrown. The only person that possibly could have thrown that gun was Brett Stallings. The other people in the parking lot were down near the bar area. Briefly touching on the issue of ineffective assistance of counsel, because the defendant has raised this on direct appeal, we're unable to fully evaluate the reasons why trial counsel did what he did, but I would state to this court that Mr. Mack had his own photographs of the parking lot. He effectively cross-examined the witness. In fact, the cross-examination was nearly as long as the direct examination in this case. Based upon the what we have on the trial record, we have to believe that there's a strong presumption under the circumstances what Mr. Mack did constituted trial strategy. If there are no further questions of the members of the panel, I will relinquish the rest of my time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lloyd. Anything further, Ms. Howe? You've probably got about 30 seconds.
Your Honor, quickly addressing some of the issues counsel just raised. He said no one was in the area of the barbershop. That's not true. Several people fled. Also, he said that Hawkins was nowhere near Stallings. That's not true. Agent Zaber testified that she was the right front corner panel of the truck. With regard to the lighted conditions, the lighted conditions were described above the tavern, not the barbershop, where the testimony was that Mr. Stallings was seen. With regard to the not being an issue, the who owns the truck, this is a constructive possession case. It certainly is an issue, a very large issue, and certainly the Fourth and Eighth Circuits thought so. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
And Ms. Houck, the court appreciates your willingness to accept the appointment, yours and, of course, that of your law firm. You've been of assistance both to your client and to the court. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement. The court will be in recess until tomorrow.